Hello, good evening, everybody. Welcome back. This is Mordechai Plotzka. Tonight's shiur is on Parshas Tazria Metzora. And last week we talked about what goes into our mouth, and today we're going to be talking about what comes out of our mouth. So it's interesting because the prohibition of eating treif is less than speaking Lashon Hara, Motzei Shema, Rechilus. And many people don't approach it that way. They just say, okay, so this is another thing. This is yet another thing we should be careful about not doing. We should be careful, of course, about making sure that what comes into our mouth is kosher. But we have to really be consistent. If we're going to be so careful with what goes into our mouth, with the kashrus, then surely we should be just as consistent with what comes out of our mouth. And so I wanted to transition over to the topic of the two birds in Parshas Metzora and then dovetail back, pun intended, to the two birds in Parshas Tazria. And they both come about for different purposes and different reasons. The birds it says in Perek Yudalet Pasuk Zion that after the Kohen makes a determination that the person has tzaras, then he takes two birds, of which one he slaughters, and the second he dips into the blood of the first seven times, meaning that the, you know, and recently, you know, I went to Eretz Yisrael recently in Israel, when I went on a trip with my daughter to Haifa for a day, there are two birds that you'll find in Israel, surprisingly. You'll find a dove, and you'll find a crow or a raven, black bird and a white bird. And obviously,
crow or raven in Israel.
And these two birds are quite beautiful in their own respect, but the dove is very powerful bird, and we're going to come back to this in just a second. I want to just talk about the Kohen for a moment. The Kohen has to make a determination before we get to the two birds about whether the person has tzaras or not. Now, think about the role of the Kohen. There's two real beautiful elements to this. In our society, the Torah actually encourages us to reach out to the highest level person. First of all, who is the highest level person in this case? It really should be the doctor. The doctor should be the one to examine the patient. And if the nega, if the wound indicates that it is taras, then the doctor will make a determination, let the rabbi or the kohen know, and then move on from there. No, the Torah doesn't tell us to go to a doctor or to a rofe. The Torah instructs us to go find the kohen, who is, in this context, the highest level person of stature. Now, this is a person who just spoke Motzei Shema, Rechilus, and Lashon Hara. You would think that that person is on the lowest level of stature in terms of social order. And yet this person has to go approach the highest level person. That in itself is phenomenal. If you think about medieval times, about serfs not being able to get close enough to the king, imagine someone who is on a very low level being able to just walk right into the palace and see the highest level person there, in this context, the Kohen, and ask him for guidance as to whether or not this is tzaras or not. Now, who is the Kohen? The Kohen is someone who is symbolic of Aaron HaKohen. Ohev Shalom Verodev Shalom. He is a lover of peace. He's a seeker of peace. When Aaron HaKohen died, all of the B'nai Yisrael mourned his passing. Not so with Moshe Rabbeinu, but it was so with Aaron. Why? Because Moshe was telling the people what they can and cannot do. Aaron was busy telling them what they can be doing with one another, meaning that let's say two business partners, Reuven and Shimon, go into business together, and then it doesn't work out so well. One doesn't pull the weight of the other, or one doesn't do what he was supposed to do. So Aaron would say, you know, Reuven, Shimon's a great guy. He just doesn't understand the business, and he needs a little more time to understand it. If you could train him a little bit better in this particular field, he would excel. And Shimon, just, you know, give Reuven a break. He's a little bit frustrated, but he'll get over it. And come back to him, smile, and make shalom between two business partners. And when it was a dispute between a husband and a wife, The wife would say, "My husband's not pulling his weight. You know, he's not doing enough around the house." And so Reuven would say, "Well, you know, your husband's just a very poor communicator. That's pretty true with most men. You know, give him another chance." And then he would turn around and flip it around and say, you know, and try to make peace between a husband and a wife. And then he was able to do so just by leveling the field a little bit, understanding that everybody has malas and chasronos. Everyone has strengths and weaknesses. And sometimes when the weaknesses become very apparent, it reveals something that may not be able to be reconciled so quickly. But Aaron HaKohen, being the lover and the seeker of peace, was always able to do so. He was always able to make peace between Ben Adam LaChavero, between man and his business partner, and Ben Ish Lishto, between husband and wife. And that's the reason why everyone loved Aaron. And he is the person in charge. He is the one, the Kohen, is now the one who has to make the determination whether to send someone into solitary confinement or not, which is probably the worst thing you can do to somebody, because if you love people, you always want to be around them. The hardest thing for you to do is to extricate yourself from them, to remove them from society. And even when it was when Miriam was stricken by Tsaras for speaking poorly about Moshe Rabbeinu, about, you know, when does he ever spend time with the family? He's always so busy talking to God. That sounds amazing to even think like, to even say this, but of course she had good intentions, right? The Jewish people, the camp of the Jewish people did not move until Miriam's 7 days were completed outside the camp. So imagine, it wasn't just simply some small person that got stricken with Tsaras. It was Moshe's sister. It was Aaron's sister. Not just it was the older sister. And yet, that person got stricken with Tsaras. And do you know what the reaction of the Jewish people was at the time? We love Miriam so much, we're not leaving camp until she's able to return. That just shows you that even when you're in solitary confinement, you're still very much a part of the camp. And that is the greatness of this whole storyline that we have to first understand before we get even close to talking about these birds. Okay. All right, so now that we understand the greatness of the Kohen and the challenge that he faced, he takes this bird and he dips it into blood, and the bird gets flown away, gets sent away. The question is, if you plan on only slaughtering one, why bring two? And if you only plan on using one, what's the point in sending the other one away? And Chazal gave an amazing answer. Actually, the Kliyaka and the Arachayim HaKadosh have a very long discussion. I'll save that for next year because of limitation of time. But for now, I'll just give you the answer that I heard from Rabbi Mansour many years ago, and that is that the first bird is representative of a bird that's just chirping all the time. You went outside today, you heard a bird chirping. It's beautiful. But the chirping represents Lashon Hara, Motoshema, Rechilas. And so the first bird has to stop. That we have to stop that. That's the Shechita, meaning that you cannot continue this way. We have to be careful of that speech. The second bird is really a signal to the rest of the community. What does that mean? The second bird is a beautiful white bird that has now red splotches all over it. And this guy's sitting out in his backyard enjoying a beautiful day like today. And he looks up from his newspaper and he sees a beautiful dove, but it's stained red. And he's trying to figure out what's going on. And he realizes, wait a minute, that's the bird. That's the bird. And that's the bird that could have been shechted. So what is the message behind the second bird? The second bird is trying to teach you that in the time that you spent saying Lashon Hara, Rechilas, and Motzei Shemra, you could have been saying something inspiring. You could have been helping someone give chizuk to someone else. You could have lifted people up. And instead, you took people down. So instead of doing something that could take down people, let's remember that first bird that got slaughtered. That's the result of people speaking poorly about one another. Let's use this next bird, this second bird, as a reminder of all of the power that we have, the koach, to do good in a time that we could have been using it for something bad. We could be inspiring people. We could be helping people. Let's use this second bird as a reminder about all the wonderful things that we can accomplish if we apply ourselves to help one another, to lift each other up, and to bring each other to flight, meaning literally to allow each other to soar and to see the greatness of one another. So that's the first message about the two birds in Parshas Metzora. And the second, when we go back to Tazria and we learn about an Isha that has just given birth and she now has the opportunity to bring a korban to Hashem, she brings a dove. And the reason why she brings a dove is because the dove, as we know, is a bird that is always looking out for its mate. If you see one dove, the other dove is not that far away. They're always together. And that is representative of the closeness, the bond that the wife has toward the husband and that the Shekhinah has toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so there's metaphysical implications for all this, but we all know that the dove is faithful to its mate, and when one of the birds are eating, the other bird is watching for the other birds that shouldn't, you know, get hurt or be stricken by a prey. And it wouldn't it be so much easier and nicer if both birds were able to eat at the same time, as opposed to one bird eating and the other bird? How do they even decide who's supposed to be eating? they know, and because they care about one another, and that is the beautiful lesson of these two birds. And that's the beautiful lesson that we have, symbolic of Klal Yisrael and our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is a very close one. It is a very dear one. It is one that is filled with fidelity and trust and felicity. And that's the type of encouragement that we need to see more of, a family, a unit that grows together. And then, obviously, we go back to the first pasuk and we say, Isha ki tazria v'yoda zachar, says the second pasuk. And the question is, why do I need to talk about Bris Milah if I'm just talking about and focused on Parashas Tahar, as the Sephardim like to say it, or Parashat Tahar? If they just want to focus on the elements of Tuman Tahara, then why introduce to me the dinim, the laws concerning Bris Milah, which really took place many years back during the time of Avraham Avinu? So the answer is because it could be read differently. As the Pasuk says, according to the holy Kedushas Levi, Levi Yitzchak from Berditchev, reads it as follows, that Isha, we have to remember that all of the Jewish people, the world at large, is actually an Isha. We are all Mekabel. We are all receiving from Hashem all the bounty, every breath that we take, called Neshima, Neshima. Says the Rebbe, every one of these breaths that we take is another gift from Hashem. So we're Makaba, we're always taking. However, there's a responsibility on each and every single one of us, men and women alike, to change ourselves and become someone who positively influences the other. And how do we do that? Ki Tazria, we have to change ourselves. We have to look for opportunities by which V'yoda Zachar, that we turn ourselves into a Mashpia, into a positive influencer of our family, of our community, of Klal Yisrael at large. And how do we demonstrate this? The first opportunity that we have to help this child, we give this baby boy a bris, and we say, at least my friends say that's what they say. I brought Hashem of girls, so I don't know about such things, but they say Kishem Shenechas Abris, Kini Kalas Atelachu B'Masam, told them that the bris, interestingly enough, is the Gematria 612. This baby just has one mitzvah. There's 613. There's 612 to go. And so we're going to help this baby grow and flourish. And how are we going to do this? Who's going to help? We have a responsibility. Nasa Adam. Could we say that, God forbid, there are two Rishiyos? No. There's one Rishiyos, right? There's one Akash Baruch Hu. So what does Nasa mean? Ashabar Lakim Lasos. Lasos, as the Kedushas Levi means, let's saking, to fix, to correct. Nasa Adam means that we collectively have a responsibility to help each other, lift each other up. And it's only when we do this can we really say that we are the positive influence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hopes to see in each and every single one of us. It's not enough for us to sit back and enjoy and to just receive, but it's much more important for us to give back the bounty, the good, the blessings that we have been able to enjoy to others so that they can also succeed. And when others succeed, we succeed. When others flourish, we flourish. And when others are successful, we are successful. That is really the beauty of giving tzedakah. When we give tzedakah to other people, we help them succeed. And in that way, we succeed in our tafkid, in our responsibilities as well. So the lessons are enormous, and the implications are great. And the time is really short. And to summarize, we have two birds in Mitzora to remind us of what we can be doing in our spare time and how we can positively influence others. The two birds in Tazria, again, represent the fidelity of the Jewish home, the felicity. And the opening of the parsha encourages us as we go into other parshios and as we continue to cascade into Vayikra, we see the positive influence that remains throughout. And so with this, I give you the bracha that you should have a successful, positive, filled with good energy, good vibes, and a really wonderful week. This is Mordechai Plotzker in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and I wish you very much all the very best. Take care.